Side 5. 100 Years of Solitude by Gabriel Garcia Marquez, continuing on page 173. The court retired to deliberate as those words still echoed in the school that had been turned into a barracks. At midnight, General José Raquel Moncada was sentenced to death. Colonel Aureliano Buendía, in spite of the violent recriminations of Úrsula, refused to commute the sentence. A short while before dawn, he visited the condemned man in the room used as a cell. "Remember, old friend," he told him, "I'm not shooting you, it's the revolution that's shooting you." General Moncada did not even get up from the cot when he saw him come in. "Go to hell, friend," he answered. Until that moment, ever since his return, Colonel Aureliano Buendía had not given himself the opportunity to see him with his heart. He was startled to see how much he had aged, how his hands shook, and the rather punctilious conformity with which he awaited death. And then he felt a great disgust with himself, which he mingled with the beginnings of pity. "You know better than I," he said, "that all courts-martial are farces, and that you're really paying for the crimes of other people, because this time we're going to win the war at any price. Wouldn't you have done the same in my place?" General Moncada got up to clean his thick horn-rimmed glasses on his shirt tail. "Probably," he said, "but what worries me is not your shooting me, because after all, for people like us it's a natural death." He laid his glasses on the bed and took off his watch and chain. "What worries me," he went on, "is that out of so much hatred for the military, out of fighting them so much and thinking about them so much, you've ended up as bad as they are. And no ideal in life is worth that much baseness." He took off his wedding ring and the medal of the Virgin of Help and put them alongside his glasses and watch. "At this rate," he concluded, "you'll not only be the most despotic and bloody dictator in our history, but you'll shoot my dear friend Úrsula in an attempt to pacify your conscience." Colonel Aureliano Buendía stood there impassively. General Moncada then gave him the glasses, medal, watch, and ring, and he changed his tone. "But I didn't send for you to scold you," he said. "I wanted to ask you the favor of sending these things to my wife." Colonel Aureliano Buendía put them in his pockets. "Is she still in Manaure?" "She's still in Manaure," General Moncada confirmed. "In the same house behind the church where you sent the letter." "I'll be glad to, José Raquel," Colonel Aureliano Buendía said. When he went out into the blue air of the mist, his face grew damp, as on some other dawn in the past, and only then did he realize that he had ordered the sentence to be carried out in the courtyard and not at the cemetery wall. The firing squad, drawn up opposite the door, paid him the honors of a head of state. "They can bring him out now," he ordered. Colonel Gerineldo Marquez was the first to perceive the emptiness of the war. In his position as civil and military leader of Macondo, he would have telegraphic conversations twice a week with Colonel Aureliano Buendía. At first, those exchanges would determine the course of a flesh-and-blood war, the perfectly defined outlines of which told them at any moment the exact spot where it was and the prediction of its future direction. Although he never let himself be pulled into the area of confidences, not even by his closest friends, Colonel Aureliano Buendía still had at that time the familiar tone that made it possible to identify him at the other end of the wire. Many times he would prolong the talks beyond the expected limit and let them drift into comments of a domestic nature. Little by little, however, and as the war became more intense and widespread, his image was fading away into a universe of unreality. The characteristics of his speech were more and more uncertain, and they came together and combined to form words that were gradually losing all meaning. Colonel Gerineldo Marquez limited himself, then, to just listening, burdened by the impression that he was in telegraphic contact with a stranger from another world. "I understand, Aureliano," he would conclude on the key, Long live the Liberal Party!